everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy May. Happy a bunch of our players are going off the NFL week. Happy, you know, I guess if you're Andre Sisto or Fitu Melifanu, you're very happy this week.
Yeah, I mean, to them, pretty happy. I assume that Trill going probably where he wanted to go, just in terms of opportunity available. Big plus for him. Nolan Cooney also ends up on the Saints, and both of them will be able to compete for roster spots. And, you know, it doesn't always work that way where you end up in a really advantageous position. And realistically, like, I think both of those guys have a real chance to make that roster despite being undrafted free agents.
Yeah, I thought all four guys, to jump into it, I think all four landed in really advantageous spots. We talk about a fair amount, like probably more so in the NBA, but in the NFL too. Getting drafted by the right team is something you have like very little to no control over. Obviously, Trill and Nolan did have more control as undrafted free agents, but that has its own issues. But you have no control over really like who takes you, and just falling to the wrong team can have real like serious ramifications. And I think all four of the guys landed in places. I mean, Sisto's almost, I mean, he'll probably start. Like, they have very little talent on that defense. So if he doesn't start, he should be playing a lot. Melifanu, I think, will probably get playing time. The Lions are also pretty talent, you know, not super talented on the defensive back side.
Talent deficient.
Talent deficient, I think, is what I was looking for. The Saints don't have very many cornerbacks that are, like, worth noting. And Trill, I think his special teams work will really help him. If you can make a dent on special teams, like, you're going to have a much easier time fitting in, both as a, you know, whether he has the ball in his hands or if he's, you know, a gunner or whatever. I feel pretty good about him making a team, even if it's not the Saints. And then Cooney, I know the Saints also are going to probably have a punter competition. So if he, you know, he just has to beat one or two guys out. Obviously that's not, it's easier said than done, but he'll definitely have a shot to do it. So I think all four really, it worked out for them. I think it was a good weekend for all of them.
Yeah. I mean, it was weird that Melifanu dropped as much as he did, to be honest. And I did feel like
some weird cornerback stuff, like, yeah, the Cowboys like taking that dude that was like a sixth round pick projected right before him.
No, the Giants like moving up, like to pick corners instead. Like, there was just a lot of random things that happened, and I felt like iffy falling as far as he did. Like, I know no two players on the same team are related, but it did seem like it was a harbinger of like Trill stock maybe not necessarily being what we thought it was. And that's not a knock on Trill either. It's just whatever scouts are emphasizing. The fact that there were so many teams that needed corners in particular, you know, could either help or hurt. And I think in this case, like, might have just been tough because there was so, especially last year's tape is just so hard to figure out for a lot of these scouts. Obviously, they didn't have, you know, the traditional combine. Pro days were kind of lackluster for a lot of guys. So, again, at the end of the day, I think all four players ended up in good spots. All four players could really make a roster. That'd be great to have, you know, four additional players in a roster. It'd be comical to have, you know, a tenth of the league almost have a Syracuse player as their punter.
I think we need to push that number. I think we just need to just get punters on every team. I see nothing wrong with this.
I mean, we're not that far away from having, because realistically, I know I said this in my article on for Monday about players that could be picked next year. The only two really obvious ones are Andre Schmidt, if he decides that he's done after four seasons, and he could be. He's somebody who, like, I know kickers aren't picked with all that much frequency, but I feel like he'd be near the top of the list. Despite the fact that he doesn't do kickoffs. So maybe that changes for him. The other one would be Garrett Williams for 2022. And he's someone who will be eligible, even though he's only technically a redshirt freshman. He redshirted, then he had last season that doesn't count towards eligibility. And this would be his third season on campus. I think Garrett showed a lot of what he could do last year. Obviously, I think he'll be avoided a little bit more this year. As they maybe try to pick on whether it's Deuce Chestnut or somebody else in the secondary. Garrett's now the established entity. I think, though, even given that, I think that he has ample opportunity to jump to the NFL next year if he so chooses. And as much as that'll be a bummer and a bit of a crisis for us on the roster standpoint, I also think that, you know, it'll only help Syracuse's selling point in the long run if you end up with, let's say, four defensive backs in two seasons. End up in the NFL. I think that'd be a great, great pitch. And they're already like in the process of making that pitch as it is.
Yeah, you can't, like honestly, in Tall Trouble at this point, you can't complain about the opportunity presented to you by getting a lot of your players into the NFL. Like, you should be able to take advantage of that, or you have much bigger issues. And I agree. I think this year will help Garrett because obviously there were injury issues, but also playing opposite Iffy, he got a lot more looks and was just so good. I think this year's tape will go a long way, even if next year he's avoided and is kind of treated as like a guy you don't want to attack. So, yeah, it wouldn't shock me at all if he is in this spot next season after the year he had this year. You know, maybe we luck out and he gives it one more shot to try to really raise his draft stock. But I think the Syracuse, I mean, there's a lot of talk about the Syracuse defensive backs this during the draft. Lewis Reddick went on this long, like, love letter to Iffy, like a couple, like he had a couple concerns, but like it was a really long diatribe about how good he was. Sisto, obviously, everyone knows the whole thing with him. I think he would have been drafted higher if he wasn't hurt. There was that run on safeties, and I think he might have like been legit early second round pick. Yeah, it's just it's impressive, and even I saw a lot of people talking about Trill as Saturday wore on, and fans of number of teams were like, oh, this is a guy that we really want in the cornerback spot. So he was getting attention even though he didn't get drafted, and hopefully he'll continue to make a name for himself. But it only helps, and you can't complain about like, oh, we lost our talented guys to the NFL. It's like, yeah, well, that's kind of the whole thing. Like that's the goal for them, so you need to be able to sell this and move forward and continue to improve because of it. So hopefully we have the opportunity to do that this year. We'll see.
Yeah, I think fans in general have kind of come around to the idea at this point that the players don't owe them anything, even like 5 years ago.
There are guys, like individual guys who leave early, I think will still get some heat if it seems like ridiculous that they're leaving. It's more basketball thing, honestly. Because football, I think guys kind of leave when they're ready.
Well, they also have to stay 3 years anyway.
Yes, and that's the other factor. But like it's turned around a lot in the last 10 years. And just all player pro player stuff has just taken such giant leaps forward, and that's a part of it, even though that's like a way less, you know, quote unquote controversial or hard to digest thing for people. But I do appreciate it because I feel like we were on this thing like in 2009 beating the tables about like it's okay that Deion left after being, I guess that was like 2011 or 2012. It's okay that Deion left after being a bench player. Like it's fine, we're gonna be okay. Or that Johnny left.
Like, I mean, you and me have had numerous conversations on this show about how it's fine. And I definitely think like, you know, the conversation around all of this has shifted significantly. I think part of it too is that the voices that aren't on board, I think, have also been like kind of muffled a bit, where they used to be more prominent in media and the conversation points around college sports. I think you're seeing a lot of either those people change their minds or those people just not really be given like the same airtime they were.
And even teams and coaches, like you can't have Nick Saban's not going to go complain about guys leaving early. I don't even remember if he did back in the day, but he certainly isn't going to do it now. When like his whole selling point is, if you come here and even if you have to wait a couple years to play, you're going to get to the league. And then, you know, you have every team's Twitter account, Instagram account, whatever, selling the draft, selling the path to the draft is like this big part of the program. It would just be so, I mean, I'm sure there's a college coach out there who's still doing this, but it's a really tough needle to thread when it's like a huge pitch. You like, who's going to want to go play for like the cantankerous anti players leaving after 3 years when they're clearly ready guys? So it's shifted so much, which, you know, it's a good sign. I think overall, obviously, we've taken these giant leaps forward in player empowerment and player rights and everything else. And, you know, we're going to see even more when the NIL finally passes, probably in the next year. So, yeah, it's a good thing. And I think I'm glad that as a Syracuse fan, people are coming around and like, no, this is something we should celebrate. This is the whole goal. Hopefully, and if you do it right and you do the right things as a program, like it's going to benefit you in the long run because one third round safety begets, you know, hopefully however many second round safeties down the road. Like it should just be kind of a spider web thing where you just add more talent as a result.
Oh, completely agree. So Dan, I think that kind of has a good segue for us here. The other player in the basketball front who is trying to play elsewhere or go to the NBA would be Quincy Guerrier. It was kind of shocking news late last week when it ended up that Quincy was definitely leaving. And he wasn't just leaving for the NBA, as we kind of figured. But while he was testing out the NBA waters, he was also going to be looking into transferring. I think while I don't want to like completely hit the panic button, I think that there's a lot of problems with program construction going on right now. That doesn't mean that Jim has lost it. That doesn't mean that Jim's not supposed to have the job anymore. That just means that it's very clear that this is more than just like the turnover that everyone's seeing this summer, well, off season in general. And that if a guy like Quincy is seeing a successful season and a pretty good one statistically, you know, as not enough to want to stick around at Syracuse for another year and get in front of scouts and all that, like, and he'd consider, you know, going somewhere even like Western Kentucky, maybe, like to play. Like, I don't know. I'm just,
there might be some other considerations with Western Kentucky.
Fair.
Shout out Rich Stansberry.
Yeah. I'm just sort of confused as to like what exactly we're doing here. And like, realistically, when you look at the construction of this team, like without the guys that we know have left already, it's not a super athletic group. And I feel like we're increasingly going to put a lot of weight on the play of Benny Williams. And while I think he's up for it, it shouldn't all fall to him. And like Buddy Boeheim hitting threes when the rest of the team is like, I wouldn't say question marks, but there's definitely not much else in terms of a sure thing on that roster.
No, it's absolutely troubling. Like when we assumed he was just going to leave for the NBA, like, as we just said, you can't blame a guy for that. Even if he doesn't get picked, he's 22. He, you know, there have been kind of rumors here and there for both of his years. Like, he was definitely had his sights in the NBA. So if that was his thing, like, even with Alan Griffin, like, you know, he's going to give his shot. And obviously I think he has a pretty, you know, it's going to be a real hard climb for him to get into the NBA draft, but like, that's his choice, you know, best of luck to him. The fact that Quincy at 22 is still willing to come play college, potentially, just not for Syracuse, like that's really troubling. Like, that's right. Like, among the more, I'd say probably aside from Kadari, like the most troubling thing that has happened in this whole transfer thing. So this whole like series of transfers. So yeah, not a huge fan. Wish that wasn't happening, but it seems at least pretty, I mean, there's no reason why he wouldn't get the kind of attention he's getting, considering how good he was, especially for the first half of the year. And if, like, he thinks his path to the NBA is aided by going to Alabama or to Western Kentucky or to one of these other schools that have reached out to him, like, that's just not a great sign for the way that the Syracuse program is being viewed by the players within it and by potentially people outside of it. Like, it's hard to, I don't see how you argue it is. So hopefully, you know, he does whatever's best for him, and I don't feel any ill will towards him, even if he goes somewhere else, hopefully not to someone that we're going to play. But it definitely says some things about the state of the Syracuse program that I think we've been kind of hinting at and have thought about a bit, but this is like a real glaring example.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, like, between those two things, and I know there was in the Oklahoman last week, Woody Newton had mentioned, like, he kind of lost trust for Boeheim and the program, you know, after he really wasn't getting a ton of burn after COVID. Like, I think that could be seen in a vacuum. That's just, you know, one player. It just didn't work out. At the same time, though, like, I think with players willing to speak more about their dissatisfaction with opportunities and situations when they leave now, and not necessarily worrying about a blowback to that while they might have even 5 years ago, I think you're starting to see a little bit of a pattern and some problems here for just SU in general. And the fact that, like, you know, maybe kids are fooling themselves into thinking that, like, you know, the gruff guy you see on TV and the curmudgeon you see on TV and at press conferences, like, isn't the guy you're going to get as your head coach, like, in the room. And, like, realistically, like, no knock on Jim, but it is. Like he is that guy. And maybe more and more kids have fooled themselves and thinking otherwise. I just think that, like, it's clear that there is a little bit of a player retention problem this year, and we're not the only team dealing with that. But I think we're running out of, like, quality selling points, I guess, if we're not going to be able to pull in, you know, top 20 or so groups of talent, if we're not going to be able to really do what we need to do in the, like, realistically, like, we've played what we've been able to do. We found a way to be better. And part of that's a credit to Jim, in terms of the fact that we've, you know, overplayed our seed. We've done better in the tournament. We found a way, despite having, you know, one top 100 player last year, to still make it, and not even be in the playing game. Like, we've done some positive things, so I'm going to take away from that. But I do feel like what we're looking at right now is this weird kind of middle ground where, like, we're not super good and we're not super bad either, but the zone is really what's kind of keeping us around, in a place that otherwise, like, our talent wouldn't necessarily dictate that we'd be.
Yeah, no, I think that's totally fair. It's just like, I think there's stuff in college sports just changing so fast, and you can't be the team that gets left behind, even if it takes like a couple of years. Like, you have to be up with it. And it just seems like we're, you know, a year or two behind on the uptake of, like, this is how you get players to stick around. This is how you get them to trust that you have their futures in mind, because that's ultimately what it's all about for most of these guys. Maybe not all of them, but most of them are. It's about getting to the NBA, or at least giving yourself the best shot. And, like, if Woody Newton's willing to go on the record and be like, yeah, I just, you know, I was playing pretty well, and then I stopped playing completely. Like, why would he stay? If there's no guarantee he was going to play more on next year's team, he probably would have and hopefully should have. But, like,
especially when everyone thinks that a coach's other son is coming to the team.
Right. And, like, who knows if he would have or wouldn't have. But, like, I don't know. You just have to, there has to be some kind of adjustment. I don't think it's impossible for him to do it. We've seen him adjust other things. Like, we've seen him adjust to the wide open 3-point offense. We've seen him vacillate back and forth between that and, like, a slowdown offense. He actually does that all the time. Changes the offense, at least to the strength of his team, presses more some years, presses less some years. Like, if he's willing to do that with his roster, more so than I think he probably even gets credit for, there's no reason why he shouldn't be able to adjust playing time, even if it's just a little bit, and, like, find someone on the staff to be the good cop, like Hopkins used to be. Get people, just, like, have an open line of communication so people know where they stand and if they're in the plans for the future, which I have to imagine, you know, he thought he planned to play Woody Newton more in a year or two. Like, make sure the guys know that. And, like, you'll still lose some because that's just the way of the world now. But you have to have players feeling good about where they are on the team, even if, like, that's not something you had to worry about so much before. Like, sorry, that's just what college sports is now. So, like, if you want to have a better team, you need to have everyone bought in and knowing that they're going to have their fair shot to be a true playmaker, and at least, like, kind of hedge some of the damage here, because, you know, maybe we can afford to have this kind of year once. Obviously, the one-time transfer exception, or the one-time extra year exception for COVID is, I think, definitely making this worse for most teams. But, like, I don't think we can afford to lose, like, four or five guys every year. Like, that's just not sustainable.
Well, and then you're bringing in more fresh. We're not bringing in big classes either. Like, realistically, just keep, like, no offense to Marek, but, like, he was a bit of a, like, you know, Euro scrap heap guy that, like, we're like, oh, maybe this works out, and it ended up working out really well. But, like, you can't keep banking on that working, like, over again and remain a top 25 caliber program.
Yeah, it's, you're just walking such a, I think, like, what comes down to a lot of this stuff between, like, the regular season struggles and, you know, relying on these tournament runs with the zone just, like, befuddling people. We're just, a lot of what we've done in recent years has just made our lives more, we're like walking a high wire, when, like, in 2012 we were, you know, the cock of the walk, and we were a one seed, and you don't have to worry so much about, like, tricking a team in the NCAA tournament. You're like, oh no, we can just go beat them. And obviously the zone was great then too, but, like, we could also just outscore you, and we don't need, like, Buddy Boeheim to get, like, superhuman hot for a month. We were just better, like, than most teams. And that was a much more fun experience. As much as I like these tournament runs, and they're great, especially coming off seasons where you didn't expect much, considering, like, you know, up and down play, not selling them, not giving them back. But I had a much better time when we were, like, winning 30 games in a regular season. Like, that just, to me, that's a better experience. And maybe that's, like, you know, maybe we're not getting back to that, but at least, like, get closer. Because if we can have these tournament runs, I think we can find a way to get the players here to then also have, like, reasonable, you know, top third of the ACC finishes, and the tournament runs then were, you know, 2012, 2013. We went deep in the tournament, and it wasn't just like some, you know, magic we pulled off. Like, no, that team, those teams were just really good. So yeah, it's, I just think like all of this kind of comes down to the same thing where you just want to give yourselves more opportunities to be like a top tier team, because ultimately in the tournament, those are the teams that end up winning almost all the time.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Like the miracle runs are fun. They have their perks, but the only people that remember those teams are us. Like the only people that really care about that at the end of the day are us. Like, are recruits happy that you made the Sweet 16? Sure. Is it good though that you lost 10 to 12 games every season, like in advance of that? Probably not.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, as fans and media, we probably just need to work on taking ourselves out of the, like, you know, oh, this is entertaining, look what we did to everybody and ruin everybody's March again conversation, and look at it realistically from the outside, where like plucky is not a great selling point, like for a kid looking to win a national title or being on a big stage before going to the NBA after a year or two.
I'll take plucky when we're like down. Like, I'll take plucky versus just like a bad season, but I also want to have the good seasons.
So, yeah. Like that was kind of what we like signed up for with Syracuse, is that like we were not gonna, like, we don't have bad seasons. The plucky seasons are the exception. Yeah. Plucky seasons have become the rule. And that's the issue.
Yep. So hopefully we figure that out. Hopefully Boeheim, yeah, he'll never admit it, and that's fine. I don't care if he admits it. Really, like, this is his thing. He'll complain about something. He'll say he's right, and then he'll go change it. And hopefully he will also do that with his roster management, because that's been his kind of whole thing for 10 years now. And that's okay. Like, I don't need Jim Boeheim to come admit to me that he was wrong about something. It just like doesn't matter to me that much. Just do it. We'll notice. We'll notice when we stop losing a bunch of transfers and guys are playing a little bit more.
There you go. Well, speaking of things that make us drink, Dan, what have you been drinking lately?
I had a pretty busy weekend. I was down yesterday at Evil Twin. It's a nice day out here in New York. Evil Twin, the original Ridgewood location. They're opening a second one in Brooklyn as well, so that'll be exciting. But this is the OG one. Had a bunch of good stuff. Probably had too many sours. I should have probably mixed in some non-sours, because eventually those will contribute to some internal issues. But they were all very good, because Evil Twin just made like some really great creative stuff. Had Nobody Wanted the Middle Seat Anyway off the top, which was a double tri-hopped IPA, Citra Mosaic, and Galaxy hops. Had some strong citrus notes. Then had probably my favorite one, which I ended up buying a 4-pack of, the To the Milky Way and Back sour or milkshake IPA, which has a really, really nice kind of a base of like a kind of mandarin orange flavor. There's some passion fruit in there, and then it also has some milk sugar and some vanilla, so it's like a really not quite creamsicle-y, but has like a, I mean, it drinks like a smoothie. And then also the stay home 18, which it really drinks like a smoothie. Pineapple, peach, passion fruit, banana, and that one, they have a bunch of different versions of that. And then also I had a stout, and I now forgot to check in on it on Untappd. But there was a stout which I will think of, and it's really great, and I feel bad not giving it its due. But I will get to that in a second.
All right. On this end, I had a couple friends up now that everybody's vaccinated. We got to just hang out, grab some beers. I had from Hermosa Brewing, Happy Happy. It was a hazy IPA from them. Had from Highland Park, Timbo Pills, that I've mentioned numerous times in the past. Sign of the Horns, a collaboration between Highland Park and Beechwood that I mentioned last week. It's a West Coast IPA. And then a double dry hopped, Yeah Yeah. It's a Imperial Hazy IPA from Highland Park as well. And then I had from Cellador, they have Jackson Ranch, a wild ale of theirs that they age in High West barrels. That one was very, very good. Really nice rye wild ale. Swung over to Smog City yesterday. Had a Hazewell with others, another hazy IPA. Really enjoyable and refreshing one, too. I know those don't always go down enjoyable or refreshing, but In this case, very much did. No heartburn. All in all, good stuff. And then in my my annual trip into random things you wouldn't think I'd be drinking, had a Topo Chico exotic pineapple hard seltzer yesterday. And let me tell you.
I feel like Topo Chico popped up here in the last week and it just blindsided me. And now I see billboards everywhere. People have talked about it. And I was aware of the brand generally, and it seemed like it just had its moment recently.
Well, because they got bought like 5-6 years ago by Coke. And then Coke wanted to get in on the hard seltzer game. Because they're like, oh, this is a carbonated beverage. We got to be in on this. So then they're like, let's just make it a Topo Chico thing instead of Coke, so that people don't just see like Coke hard seltzer and like wave us off.
That's smart.
Yeah. So then
the big powerful brand did a smart thing. I can't believe they found out how to sell stuff.
So then this Topo Chico exotic pineapple is fantastic. They did a nice job here because it's like, it's light on the flavor. So it doesn't go for sweetness. It goes for like, oh, you like seltzer. Let's go with a little, you're going to taste a little bit of alcohol, but mostly you're going to taste a little bit of fruit on top of that. So it tastes super refreshing, really enjoyable. I would highly recommend the exotic pineapple in particular. Definitely a good one.
So the stout was from Evil Twin, the Trouvé de Candy Bars Royal Treatment Pastry Stout, which was sitting at 13%.
Oh boy.
They brew it with a bunch of candy bars, coconut, candied peanuts, marshmallow, and vanilla bean. It is like one of the better versions of like a legit chocolate stout that you've had. I'm sure it's very thick. 13% is masked crazily. Like I didn't realize it was that alcoholic until someone mentioned it to me. Really delicious. And I didn't have a full one, but since we're talking seltzers, Evil Twin also makes their own crazy seltzers. I tasted a dragon fruit, passion fruit, marshmallow seltzer from them, which was really, really good. The marshmallow made it really interesting because it has like a marshmallowy finish. Kind of like takes out the sourness and the bitterness from the fruit. But yeah, their seltzers are great. They do a lot of very, very creative things with those. So highly recommend if you're in the Brooklyn/Tweens area.
Solid. Yeah, I feel like there were a lot of local spots trying it out. I feel like a lot fewer of them have of late for the hard seltzers.
It was big for like 2 years where like craft places were doing it. Some have been, I think they're mixed results, but I do think like the whole thing is kind of here to stay though.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think necessarily I wouldn't say necessarily that that every single brand that's doing it is going to keep doing it.
No, some will find success and they'll keep on doing it. And others will just be like, all right, well, that was fun. We got it on the boom for a second.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you can't have this many, I mean, especially like this year alone, like, Mike's Hard, Michelob and Topo Chico all rolled out new stuff. And like, that's just from like macro brands, like on top of the like already like laundry list of brands that had done it.
Yeah, I think people are pretty locked in on like if they're like, if they're White Claw people or they're Truly people or like maybe like a Topo Chico comes in and like does some interesting stuff with it. But like you can only have so many, like how many macro beers like really contend? Like it's probably like less than 10. Like I agree. I think it's going to kind of level out to where you kind of know what you're getting and it's going to be like kind of like a Bud Coors Miller thing.
I think it kind of has to. I mean, like, I guess there's like, there'll be like a Rolling Rock equivalent or something like that. But that's a conversation for another podcast.
That's a deep summer.
We might need it. Who knows? Dan, go for it.
I was gonna say, if we lose any more players, I think we're done. Maybe not women's basketball. Who knows with them? But I think the men are done hemorrhaging players. So hopefully. Hopefully we don't need to do a full booze podcast, but maybe.
We shall see. More things that make us drink. Syracuse men's lacrosse.
Yeah.
Where I'm not going to provide any speculation on the Chase Scanlon situation because just from a journalistic, but also just like a legal standpoint, I don't really think it's smart to.
There's nothing really for us to add there. Like no. People know like what's out there at this point. So
educate yourself if you haven't already. There's plenty written about it. We wrote about it. I think there's some issues maybe with how John Desco and the program have handled it. But in any case, they did not handle things well on the field over the weekend. 22-8 loss to Notre Dame. A lot of the things that have gone wrong all year continue to go wrong. We've been just, you know, drubbed to hell numerous times this year. We've also won some, like, a couple games at least. The Virginia games are really all that's, like, buoying our entire, you know, NCAA tournament resume. So that's nice. But realistically, like, we're kind of on the fringe. It's not ideal. We've got, you know, a game against Robert Morris. So that's fun. But realistically, like, this is a team that probably gets in. But I it's such a bummer compared to, like, what we went into this year thinking, that, like, this team is going to be lucky if they win a game.
Yeah, it just seems like they're just too inconsistent. Like, obviously, they've had good moments. I almost feels like, obviously, the Stanley thing aside, is that I almost reacted less to the Notre Dame game because of everything that's going on with the program. And, like, it's kind of natural for them to have a dud, and unfortunately, a team at a really bad time. But at the same time, like, they had a really inspiring game against Virginia. So I don't know if we just have their number or if that's, you know, signs of this team can get up to that level. But early, it just feels like that Duke game, that Duke overtime game where they came back, they had this, like, furious comeback. They almost scored that huge win. They gave it up at the end. At the time, I was like, you know, that's a disappointing loss, but you hope that this was, like, something that could get the team out of, like, they just played with one of the best teams in the country at Duke. They took them to overtime. They almost had, like, a all-time comeback. And you would hope that would have sparked them. And instead, it seems like, I don't know if that was, like, a contributing factor to, like, the general letdown of the last couple of weeks, but it's hard not to identify it because, outside, as you said, outside of, like, the Virginia games, obviously they beat Albany, but that's what it is. Like, it's been rough. The two Notre Dame games were absolute blowouts. The UNC game was an absolute blowout. Like, it's tough to see this team as a real factor given their penchant for, like, it's just not great when you can just go lose a game by 10 plus goals regularly. Like, it just doesn't stream a team that's about to make a lot of noise.
Well, I guess the other question here is that, and it's one that's been rumbling, I think, for many seasons now, but I think it's coming to a head this year. What do you think about John Desco's long-term, like, abilities here? Because I do think that between, like, this, I mean, like, this conversation doesn't happen if they win at all last year, in all likelihood, and that team looked like they could have. But Desco's teams have been pretty inconsistent, and increasingly so over the last few years. It's been harder to attract talent. It's been harder to bring in, like, transfers that truly work out, like, in the big scheme. I think that it just seems like there's been too much uncertainty about this program for too long, considering what it is, compared to the rest of the sport. Like, we haven't made a Final Four in a decade. Like, that's not, well, almost a decade still. That's not, like, an acceptable thing. And I don't want to sound like, you know, just like irrational fan, just like, oh, well, Syracuse lacrosse should be in the Final Four every year. I don't believe that anymore. I think the sport's changed too much. I think it's become very, very difficult to do that for anyone, not just SU. But, like, do you think that Desco's kind of, like is he staring down, like, the end of his legacy here, or at least the end of his tenure? Or do you still think there's more time?
I'd be surprised if he was fired this year. And also, again, like you said, it's really tough because we just don't know what would have happened last year. Because if he wins the national championship last year, and they would have been one of the probably one or two favorites, I mean, we've joked about, like, they should just hang a banner. They were so good last year. We were having none of these discussions outside of, like, the off-field stuff. It's just, you know, you can very much afford a post-championship hangover. Especially, like, once you seem to have gotten everything back on track. But now it's A, the struggles, and then also the fact that Desto seems to have kind of been the, like, quote unquote fall guy for the Stanlin stuff. Like, it's kind of hard to divorce those two now, because of how everything's been handled. And we don't want to, like, speculate too much, but just, like, they really let Desto kind of go out on that issue, and just kind of take it himself. So that plus, I imagine he did that with the confidence that, like, Wildhack isn't going to fire him over the team's performance this year. But it still doesn't look good for anyone involved. So it's, it's really hard to know. There are just so many factors that are beyond just, like, what's happening with this team. I almost think, like, the more you know, I think it would almost be more realistic if he just like kind of retires or something. But I don't know. I expect him to come back next year, and that'll really be a make or break. But it seems like we're getting to that point where like something we just need like some real tangible improvement. And unfortunately, like 2020 was pretty clearly like what that seemed to have been for us, and it was pulled, the rug was pulled out from under us from because of COVID. So yeah, really, really difficult. It's just so complicated because of all of these different factors that are, you know, some of which have everything to do with lacrosse, some of which have like just nothing to do with lacrosse. But it's been kind of lingering out there for a while. I still think it's, if we're just talking lacrosse, I think it's probably premature. But yeah, it's extremely complex.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely, this is not going to be the end of this conversation for anybody, us included. We'll see what happens in the postseason. Speaking of postseason, do you want to kind of close out with a little bit about the women's lacrosse team, which, you know, big props to them for what they were able to pull off last week. Team really kind of closed strong. I mean, they played great all year. But since that 17-6 loss to North Carolina, won by 5 against Georgetown, by 3 against Virginia, a 10-goal win against Albany, beat Louisville in back-to-back games, 19-5 and 19-7 scores, both on the road. And then after a heartbreaking 1-point loss to Boston College, they followed that up 2 days later with a 16-7 win. And in the ACC tournament, great defensive effort against Virginia Tech, winning 9-4 in the first round, a 19-7 win against Boston College in round two. And then in the final game, unfortunately, a 9-4 loss to North Carolina, but vast improvement from that first 11-goal loss. And realistically, like, the defense greatly improved. And this all happening without, you know, arguably the team's two best players all season. Well, at least most of the season. Megan Carney recently went out and she'll miss the rest of the year. This team is extremely, extremely good. And I think, you know, especially compared to like the men's team, it's like there's, I think in the last couple of years, or at least this year in particular, you've seen this team really coalesce around the talent they have on the roster and come together. I think last year's team too looked like a Final Four bound team. I think this year's team as well looks like a Final Four bound team and a team that can win it all if they don't face North Carolina in the championship game.
Any, I mean, if they do, like, there's a certain, obviously women's lacrosse, like the teams that are great seem to rise to the top most of the time. We've had trouble getting over the hump because it's so often you're playing like the best team in the championship or in the Final Four. But I think when we talked about basketball, we've talked about like men's lacrosse. All you can really hope is for year in and year out, you're giving yourselves the chance to compete for a national championship. And while there's definite frustrations over the fact that the women's lacrosse team hasn't quite gotten there yet, like, there's just no better example of, like, at some point the dam's going to break and they're going to get one. They're just in the conversation every single year, this year included, even with, like, significant absences. And they're playing great lacrosse right now. So I'm excited for them. The fact they've beaten BC two of these last three is really encouraging, considering BC is really good. And the fact they played North Carolina so tight, you know, that'll be a tough matchup if they face them in the Final Four, if they face them in the national championship. But I think they're in the position, again, they're in the position to play for a title. They may or may not get there, but like, this is probably the most consistent team on campus. I think that's pretty uncontroversial to say. hopefully this is the year, but you know, there's complaints about Deet and his salary and et cetera. And these are like, you know, decade long issues now, but they're in the talk every single year. And that's what we complain about, and we hope for the other big teams on campus. And this is like the model for it. Like, and at some point, I fully believe they'll break through at some point. So yeah, hopefully this is a year, but we'll find out. But it's been they've been exciting whenever I've caught them. They're a good time, and that's always been the case. They play a very good brand of lacrosse. Even when some other teams, some other championship teams of years past don't. So I also appreciate that part of it.
They're on some Big Ten shade.
Yes,
out there for sure.
Eyes at Evanston and College Park.
Yeah, and College Station.
Texas, I was at College Station.
Texas, I was at College A&M's Point. Brand new West.
Yeah, Texas A&M women's lacrosse. Get it together. You play awful. You play an awful brand of the sport.
Kevin might take exception to the conversation point you had about the most consistent team on campus.
That's fair. The cross country is also great. This is, and also since I
had, and also has won a title.
Yes, at field hockey as well has won a title in very recent history.
Field hockey's kind of struggled to keep it up of late. This year in particular.
I think the conversations cross country and women's lacrosse, I think, is pretty clearly
one of the two.
Yeah. Also, shout out to the tennis team. Tennis made the NCAA tournament, so that was announced, I think, as we started the podcast.
Yeah. Way to go, tennis. We'll be sure to get something up on that. But yeah, while SU women's lacrosse has been consistent, the ACC schedule is just kind of a bear. I mean, probably more so than the men's schedule is, just because there's more teams and they're all very good.
And they're all still good.
And they're all still, it doesn't matter. It's like, oh, we just added three more, and it's still just as much of a bear. SU hasn't made the Final Four since 2016, something that most people probably didn't realize. But before that, five straight Final Four trips for them. They made it in 6 out of 7 years. They made the championship in 2012 and 2014, but unfortunately have not been able to get over the hump. I think they've actually, at this point, outlasted a couple different dynasties. Or would-be dynasties in women's lacrosse, and they've managed to kind of stick around here. They've made every tournament since 2012. They missed the 2011 tournament, but realistically, they've been a fixture in the NCAA tournament since 2000. Fixture atop the ACC, fixture in the mix for both the regular season and tournament championships. I mean, this team, I thought last year that team looked like a title contender. This one does too, to be honest. And again, I think it's North Carolina is really the one that could bite them. I think for the most part, we'd be able to avoid BC for a bit in the NCAAs. I know getting to the tournament championship and beating the teams we've beaten this year, we're going to get a top three seed. That means we get a bye. Things are looking very good for this squad. I really, really hope they can, at minimum, get back to a Final Four.
I think, again, that was another team that was bitten by COVID last year that would have been in contention, like the men's team. But yeah, I think Final Four is a good, realistic goal. Obviously, you want to win it. But, if we get back to the Final Four, I think everyone should be pretty happy with where things are, especially considering the injuries and the absences. To overcome those is no joke.
Yeah. I mean, the injuries in particular, again, arguably your two best players out for a significant amount of time. Not an easy thing to overcome, and it's a testament to the amount of talent that the Gates brought in here. All right, Dan, I think that's wrap us up today. Do you have any other any parting thoughts for the folks at home?
No, enjoying the Mets little bounce back here over the last couple of days. So hopefully they continue that. And hopefully the spring sports move forward. Hopefully we get some good lacrosse out of both teams. And then just gonna enjoy the nice spring weather here and move on towards something more close to regular life, hopefully. Knock on wood.
Yeah, I'd very much like that. I have some travel I'm looking at. Same. It's nice to be able to just get out, be safe, not endanger other people or yourself. If you haven't been vaccinated and have the opportunity to do
please, please, please go do it.
Yeah, please do it for yourself, for your neighbors. It's definitely a worthwhile endeavor. And this podcast will tell you that, unlike maybe other podcasts that would tell you otherwise.
I really don't know how much crossover there is between those podcasts and ours, but sure, I agree. There are others that would say no, and we're both vaccinated and we're good. So yeah, everyone come join the club.
I would bet there are more Joe Rogan listeners that also listen to this podcast than you would think.
That's fair. I didn't even think about that.
No, not to Joe Rogan listeners.
The millions and millions of you.
Yeah, the millions and millions of you. So there's probably a pretty fair cross section.
That's fair. Yeah. There's almost definitely a couple.
Don't tell people not to get vaccinated. Unless you have a health reason to not do so. I'm not telling you what you should do. I'm just saying realistically, it would be wise for your well-being, honestly, and others to get vaccinated if you can. And at this point, I feel like we're starting to see appointments out there. Yeah, exactly. You want to go to the Dome? You want to watch a game?
I want to go to the Syracuse Rutgers game. It's on my birthday weekend. I want to go up. I want to have a reasonable amount of people there and feel good about it. So yeah, do it for me. Do it for my 31st birthday.
Yeah,
that's my message to everyone.
Yeah, do it for that. Do it so that you can watch Marvel movies in theaters. I don't know.
Yes, all these things are good.
So you can see your parents, your grandparents,
Also important, I guess.
Yeah, all the things that should be priorities. Anyway, that was Dan. I'm John. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Troy News and Apps of the Podcast. You can rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, Megaphone, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, Overcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, and go Orange.
Go Orange.